You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, where we uplift caregivers through education and support while also lifting up their invaluable role in society. I'm Liza.
And I'm Kristen, and together we are the Empowered Caregivers. We are here this morning with Lance Robertson, the Director of Health at an organization named Guidehouse. Lance is also a United States Army veteran, university administrator, and government official who formerly served as an Assistant Secretary of Health and Human Services in Aging. In there, he was also the Chief of the Administration of Community Living. The ACL has a mission for advancing independence, integration, and inclusion throughout life. Woo, what a resume. Lance, welcome.
Hey, good morning. It's good to be with both of you.
Thanks for taking the time to join us today.
Thanks for joining us today to really break down those various governmental programs and actions that are being done to support family caregivers. So our first question is really getting down to trying to break down for the listeners and for us all of these different names that I just read in your bio, right? So could you first explain who the Administration of Community Living is?
Absolutely, Kristen. And listen, I get it. You know, the federal government structure, the system is, it's enormous. And it does take a little bit of time and effort to fully understand kind of what's going on there. But I think it's imperative for your listeners, not only because of these supports that we know the federal government continues to provide to family caregivers, but let's be honest, we're all taxpayers. So it's good to know, sure, where's your money going? What are we investing exactly in? So the Administration for Community Living is a relatively new federal agency. It's about 10 years old. We actually just are celebrating our 10-year anniversary. And it's one of 11 operating divisions in the behemoth Department of Health and Human Services. So HHS, for context, is a $1.6 trillion agency, one of the largest in all of federal.
Okay, and so when you say 1.6 trillion, let me interrupt you for a sec. Are you saying people that are working or money, tax dollars that are going there?
No, money.
Money,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so like most federal agencies, there's about 90,000 staff that work for HHS, but the majority of the work is subcontracted. So like at ACL, we only had about 200 staff, but our roughly $5 billion budget all went out the door to grantees who then delivered services. So it's almost like if you thought about the analogy of a corporate structure, you have HHS as the flagship corporation, and then underneath that, 11 subsidiary businesses. And one of those would be ACL, the Administration for Community Living, which I think has the best mission in all of federal government. Its purpose is to help create, again, as you said, independence and opportunity for older adults and people with disabilities, roughly 110 million Americans.
Wow.
Wow. And now that we have a clearer understanding of the organization, can you explain your role within it?
Absolutely. Yeah, so it was my honor to lead the organization. So I was called to DC in 2017. The role that I played was a bifurcated role. I was the U.S. Assistant Secretary on Aging, the fifth one in the nation's history. And that position required Senate confirmation. So I had to go through that whole, if you've ever watched the Senate confirmation process, delight. So that was one role. And then the other role was as the administrator of ACL. So you also then are an agency head. And, you know, it's important to point out the bifurcation because you have different reporting responsibilities and you have different, the different roles do bear obviously different initiatives and things that you're responsible for.
Okay. And I need you to clarify, what's bifurcation?
Oh, two different jobs. So you're kind of wearing two hats.
Okay. Okay. Great. And now that I have to have a vocabulary check, and clearly I need a math lesson if I really thought there was 1.6 trillion people on the planet. Oh, I realized that mistake after you started talking. I'm like, of course it had to be money. But now let's get into a little bit about kind of the reason why you're here, right? So we reached out because we know the ACL has assisted in this Raise Family Caregiving Act, right? And part of doing that, in all of the research I can find, there's a council that's reporting to Congress. Is that correct?
Well, it reports to the HHS secretary.
Okay. And then, but I'm really confused about what is the actual report that's been created, the actual group. Well, I guess the group is obvious. It's the people. But what is this report? And then do we actually have a piece of legislation? Is there an act that got passed?
Right. So let's break it down. And first of all, at ACL, I just want us to be mindful that sure. as a federal agency, they have about 36 different programs that they're responsible for. So the okay. services that are offered to family caregivers represents one of about 36 different efforts. And I point that out just so there's an acknowledgement of really the enormity of what federal agencies deliver on. I personally am such a big fan of family caregivers. I think this is the one of the most important things that ACL does.
Sure.
So really the particular activity we're talking about today was initiated and is driven by a piece of legislation that was passed in 2017 that created the act, created the council, and as all legislation does, it sort of laid out some expectations. So that's Congress saying, okay, this is what we want done, and now we're going to assign a federal agency to deliver.
Okay.
So it was, of course, assigned to HHS and then, of course, proxied to ACL, which makes sense because we do most of the work around family caregiver support. And if you go back and read the actual law, which isn't lengthy, and for those that are really interested or just find that sort of thing exciting, you know, that piece of legislation's, I think, well-written. And also, I think that, you know, it helps people understand the framework behind this activity.
Okay.
So essentially, what the legislation required was that HHS set up a council, and that meant we took applications. There's a formal process for everything. So there's a process to have folks submit to be considered. Then, of course, we screened them, and then eventually they're nominated by the HHS secretary to serve on this council.
Okay.
Then once a council's assembled, the council's primary operative is to put together this strategy, this plan.
Okay.
So, and that seems simple, but it's a lot of work. I mean, there's a lot of time investment, and then, of course, they have subcommittees, and at the end of the day, they put together a report. And we call it a report because that means it hasn't actually gone through the formal approval process yet.
Okay.
So the report goes to Congress for feedback.
Okay.
So that happened just recently. And of course, I'm sure the federal agency is still waiting on feedback because that process takes a while.
Sure.
And, you know, my role in the former administration as administrator was to chair this council and to make sure that the council stayed on track, which I have to be honest, Krista, I'm super excited to tell you they did. Despite the pandemic.
Right.
So even though COVID was going on, the council was still willing to meet and we still advanced that important work because we all agreed caregivers can't wait. I mean, who knew how long the pandemic was going to last and we couldn't
exactly.
just stop this work.
Right.
So I hope that helps kind of at a high level, give you a little bit of an understanding of that process.
It does. And on just a quick local level or more like to the ground, what's happening with that report and those recommendations today? You said they're kind of waiting for the feedback. So does that mean any of these goals are being accomplished? Or I guess not accomplished because of course they're not being finished, but is anyone actually working towards these goals or are we waiting to get all of the feedback from the different players?
Yeah, so here's the inside baseball answer to that.
Okay.
Yes, there are recommendations. There are 26 recommendations in the report.
Right.
And the majority of them are at some level happening already.
Okay.
What we try to do in the report is draw out for Congress where more support is needed. So sometimes a report doesn't come up with all these brand new ideas. Sometimes it's a reinforcement of what we know is working and we just need more money, more support.
Okay.
So to your question, some of that is still happening. Now, you know, the home run, to use that baseball analogy and carry it through, you know, the home run is to make sure that Congress delivers. And
okay.
that's what we're all hoping for, is that Congress sees the value of this report, the value of where that investment could pay off for American caregivers. And then we see, as a result, higher appropriations, maybe more legislation that changes laws or policies
sure.
that need to be amended. Those are the sort of actions that really rest with Congress.
Okay. That was helpful. Thank you.
And this seems like a very bipartisan issue. It just feels like it's something that everybody can get behind. I mean, do you feel optimistic?
Absolutely. And that was one of the blessings of being in charge of an agency that served older adults and people with disabilities. Very little of what we ever did got caught up in that political spin because most everybody appreciates that as constituents, as voters, as Americans, These are often marginalized populations, and yet we've got to do something to better support them.
Exactly.
As we'll talk about later in the interview, their independence has tremendous ramifications on a lot of things, from the budget to just the health of society, and then, of course, ultimately, how the individual is able to live and enjoy their lives.
Definitely. Liza, do you want to start getting into asking him some of our specific questions?
Yeah, we have a few minutes left, but there's one striking statistic that came out. According to the ACL, by 2040, there'll be more than 80.8 million people over the age of 65, more than twice as many as there was in 2000. It's very clear that we are not well equipped as a nation to handle this rising increase in the elderly and the caregivers that support them. From your perspective, what needs to be done immediately and what needs to be done in the long term? And that's a big question, so we can break it down and come back to it.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And it is a common question, Liza. I was in more than one congressional testimony experience where that question was asked of me. So, there's not one silver bullet. However, I think the progress we're making in supporting community living is the answer. People who are served in the community, the health outcomes are better, the cost is less, and at the end of the day, it's a win-win because that's what they prefer. Okay. So there's an unprecedented level of support right now for serving people in their homes and in their community, and that just has to continue to be kind of the mainstay support that we chase.
Okay, so that's both the long-term and the short-term? It's just have to keep emphasizing how important it is to, and what is it about being in your community? Why is that so essential?
Yeah, I think for a variety of reasons, it's just the most fulfilling place to live. You have those around you who you love, the environment's familiar to you. And again, it always, research validates, indicates better health outcomes.
Okay. Well, excellent. That's really insightful. And I'm looking forward to getting into more details about these goals as we come back from the break. You're listening to The Empowered Caregiver with Liza, Lance Robertson, and myself, Kristen. We'll be right back.